Thinks all murderers are the same. Well, that's not the case. Oh, this guy was a sexually sadistic serial killer.
He was a natural predator. He was on the hunt all the time.
McDuff became known as the broomstick killer.
He's snatching, taking, abducting, grabbing women all over Texas.
This was evil beyond anything any of us could comprehend.
McDuff's the convicted murderer who in 1966 was sentenced to die in the Texas electric chair.
He beat the death penalty. Something's wrong here.
Who would ever imagine that anyone would ever release this man from prison? The corruption was so deep in the parole system. Tell us how this monster got out of prison.
Naively.
Well, and that is the trailer to a five-part documentary series airing on Fox Nation called Freed to Kill. And joining me now is its creator and host of the podcast, True Crime Reporter, Robert Riggs, a Peabody Award-winning investigative reporter. How you doing, Robert? Thank you for joining me.
Well, Randy, thank you from Dallas, Texas. And unfortunately, the story we tell is not unusual. McDuff was among hundreds of inmates set free in Texas at that time. We had a violent crime wave in his wake.
What led to the multiple releases that then led to carnage because of those releases? Was there a general theme, a common denominator?
Yes, we had a prison overcrowding crisis in Texas. A federal judge had been on the back of the state for more than 10 years. The legislature, both Democrats and Republicans, would talk tough on crime to get reelected, and they passed hundreds of new laws, but they did not pass appropriation bills to build new prisons. We just simply didn't have enough beds. And so to fade the political heat from law enforcement and the public, they began secretly releasing 150 inmates a day in Texas back in the late 80s up through early 90s. And they were releasing the worst of the worst. Finally, in a fiery hearing, a parole board member said, yeah, we're scraping the bottom of the barrel. McDuff and, I exposed, there were more than 60 former death row inmates were set free.
That's amazing. I mean, and this guy went on then to become a serial killer, right? I mean, it was just brutal, horrific animal-type behavior. It was unbelievable.
Well, he was already a serial killer. He had randomly murdered three teenagers in Fort Worth, Texas in 1966. He had bragged that he had murdered others. I found a woman that he had picked her up during high school, leaving a football game, raped her, cut her throat from ear to ear, and threw her in a ditch and left her to die, and she had survived.
Yeah.
And then after he gets out on parole, you know, and there was a sheriff that really knew his history and the history of his family, who said the moment he heard he was out, and by the way, they kept it a secret that he was out. They didn't tell law enforcement as they were supposed to do, but he said, I guarantee you that bodies will be start showing up a week from now, a month from now. What was the next day after he walked out? The first body showed up.
Well, I wanted to use your experience, and of course, you're host of the True Crime Reporter podcast, and one of the most popular in that genre. I guess this documentary series came out of your investigative reporting and from your podcast. These are extreme examples of, you know, anything but justice in the criminal justice system. We just last hour talked in this National Police Week with Captain Brian Lear of the Boone County Sheriff's Department about the myriad wonderful things that law enforcement officers do to protect us every day, and how, you know, they've come under such siege and such defamation these days, just, I mean, in aggregate, right, by the entire national media, and especially those on the left. And so then we think, you know, how do we, what can we learn from episodes and that time in Dallas, in Texas? And specifically, what can we say about people that may not be such heinous criminals and aren't left out having been convicted? But have you touched on, and what do you have any thoughts on these guys that we've seen it more than once? This guy up in Buffalo was, you know, making crazy. He was going to kill the people, his students, fellow classmates. They had him in, you know, in a hospital for a day and a half under watch and evaluation, and they let him out. And look at what happens. I mean, this seems to be a recurring theme. Do you have any thoughts about that in view of your experience and your research?
Yes, and let me go back a minute to the value of law enforcement and how underappreciated they are.
Yes, sir.
If you want to see law enforcement doing its best, going beyond the call of duty, watch Freed to Kill, five-part series. I brought back the homicide detectives, the U.S. Marshals, the former United States prosecutor who launched a nationwide manhunt. And you will see such dedication that went way, way beyond what they were even called to do. And then later, after they catch him, and eventually he gets two death penalties. He's the only man in Texas history to get three death penalties. They gave him two for insurance. They stay on the case, and they eventually get him to admit where some of the bodies are so that the families can have peace. They didn't find them all. I mean, there are dozens, but they did find some, and it wasn't part of their job description. And they, when you see how earnest they are, there's a U.S. Marshal. He was known as the toughest fugitive hunter in the U.S. Marshal Service. He was an international hunter. And when we were interviewing him, he broke down crying. Everybody was in shock because the guy's so tough. But it was what he knew had happened to these young women that were abducted and murdered by this serial killer. That just showed you the level of commitment. Now, we've forgotten the lessons of history in Texas, certainly from 30 years ago, because now we've got in some of the urban areas, Austin, Dallas, Houston, these liberal bond programs. Sometimes they're not even having to post bond. I call it catch and release. You know, we have on the streets of Dallas, Austin, and Houston, capital murder defendants that are out on bond, that they've turned loose. There is suddenly a
say it ain't so.
say it ain't crazy. So. And what do we have going on? An increase in violent crime.
Yeah.
They've caught some of these violent criminals recommitting because they had a monitor on. They had that ankle monitor on, you know, were able to place them at the scene of the crime. One of the problems I see that has never been corrected, it went back to the McDuff era, and there were hundreds of violent inmates loose. The parole board, they were political appointments. They were by the governor. They were considered plum jobs. They really had no qualifications for it. And you will see this in the court system and judges turning people loose that really don't have the expertise. You really need people that have forensic psychiatry under their belt, or long-established detectives who worked with the psychopaths. I mean, that's what you're dealing with. They can assess them. And we just, you know, we have a revolving door. We have a serious, obviously, with young men, you know, mental health issues. But we don't have anybody making an assessment, you know, using their expertise and common sense about, no, they shouldn't go back out the door. We got to do something. We don't even have any place to put them. I mean, I've known families here in Dallas that had 20-somethings that were alcoholics, had drug problems. And, you know, they would beg the judge, please put them somewhere, put them a long time. No, they're adults, and they go through a revolving door. And until we stop the revolving door, we're just going to see this repeated.
Yeah. Well, it takes a commitment, though, a coordinated commitment between the electorate that is willing to support incarceration for those that are not rehabable, right? As well as then to elect prosecutors that are 180 degrees as far away from the moon as from the sun, from George Gascon out in L.A., for instance, and then demand that the prosecutors and the judges do their thing, too. So it takes a coordinated effort. And we realize that the judges, depending on how the statutes are written, both at the metropolitan, state, and then federal jurisdiction, may have their hands tied, too, right? I mean, there's something to be said there. But we have to do something about these things that are previewed. The previous actions are harbingers of, you know, what's going to happen. It's not a matter of if, it's when with some of these people. When you look back, and you hate to be an armchair quarterback, that's always easy to do, but my God, when you hear some of the statements this guy up in New York was making, the Buffalo shooter, there's clearly that's a person that may be so mentally ill that they need to be in a mental institution. I guess we can thank the aftermath of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest several decades ago and the deinstitutionalization of many of our seriously, gravely, I would say permanently mentally ill people that are psychotic and can't be fixed. I think that was a grave error. What do you think?
Well, I would venture to say that the street cops that dealt with him, they knew, because he's seen so much of it. They've kind of been experts by experience. I guarantee you they knew, they felt it, but they don't have any power. And then, we're going through a woke time in the criminal justice system and other places. And a lot of people are just very naive about the evil capability of some people. And, and they think psychopaths can be rehabilitated, and it just doesn't happen. It's just not realistic. And when I was on television news and reporting on them, the sad thing was that we had to vanilla code it. Now, we couldn't really go into the detail. It was a family audience. But when you do get into the detail of the case, or you see what the jury hears, it's unthinkable. It's absolutely unthinkable. In the case of Kenneth McDuff, he was classified as a sadistic sexual serial killer. Roy Hazelwood, one of the original profilers for the FBI, helped me kind of try to understand McDuff when I was reporting. He said, look, Robert, he's the great white shark of serial killers. He's the worst. He's hardest to catch. And the problem is that his whole pleasure in life is the suffering. So he would keep his victims alive. Would brutally sexually assault them in every manner, but also then torture them and bring them back from death so he could do it some more over for hours. We always imagined, and I remember the female reporters that covered the capital murder trials with me. Oh my God, they were just crying in the courtroom because they thought his victims, they had to be begging to God, please take me now. I can't take any more of this. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you said it before. There is evil in the world, and the liberal, you don't even have to say the far liberal left, just the liberals in general, have some rose-colored glasses on when it comes to this matter, and they view the world as they want it to be, and people, evil people, as they wish they were, rather than the way they are. And I guess until we open their eyes to the mistaken assumptions they make, I think we're going to continue to see this. Well, I want to make sure that everyone knows that they can catch Freed to Kill, a five-part documentary series from my guest Robert Riggs, investigative reporter, on Fox Nation. It's available now. Is that right, Robert?
It is, and my hats off to Fox Nation, because there were a lot of channels passed on this. And you know why they passed? They didn't want to show those that had a positive image for law enforcement.
Yeah, right. No, we. That's right.
I had them say, yeah, hey, could you give us some crooked cops? I'm serious. We're all into that. But Fox Nation, they really stepped up. They were like, we really like this. And so now we're working on a series of stories that'll be coming on, and our podcast is turning this way too, on the Texas Rangers, the iconic oldest serving law enforcement organization in North America and most of the world. They're about to have their 200-year bicentennial. Now, you talk about tough cops, and they're almost like our last line of defense in the state.
Well, we look forward to all the work you're doing. And again, we, yeah, I think Fox is one of the last bastions of media that that knows there is a true north. And, you know, you can deviate a little bit each way and still be doing the right thing. But there is a true north. The rest of the world seems to have gone crazy. And the compass is just spinning in every direction. Robert Riggs, thanks for spending some time with me. Good luck on your further adventures on Fox Nation with your documentaries. Appreciate you very much.
Thank you, and I want everybody to just come to truecrimereporter.com. We're on all of the podcast channels.
All right. Hey, thanks, Robert. Have a good evening. Well, there he is, Robert Riggs. And, you know, we talked about the whole issue of prosecutors being soft on crime. We're talking about no bond for criminals in New York City and other jurisdictions. And now a report out in Virginia Cruda, who will be my guest at 7:45, wrote about this out at the... About Kim Gardner, St. Louis Circuit Attorney, sitting on over 4,000 solved cases. We'll unpack that with Virginia at 7:45. And then at 8:45, talk with John Lott about gun crime and how that's being mislabeled. Speaking of big lies, how about the big lie that the national media, the left, Chuck Schumer, Joe Biden, and everyone else is talking about Tucker Carlson and maybe you, because you want tight borders, are responsible for the shooting in Buffalo. We'll talk about that. And Nancy Pelosi may not get communion tomorrow in San Francisco. That coming up straight ahead on the Randy Tobler Show here at 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL. Well, in one of those questions of where do politics and your faith, if you're a politician or if you're an aspiring politician, where do they intersect? Should they intersect? To which should you be more allegiant? Now, I'm sure Nancy Pelosi really has already placed her her bets on which is more important. She tries to parse the old, I wouldn't do it myself, but I want to, that's the usual position that politicians take, right? Catholic politicians or, you know, evangelicals, Protestants who are against abortion is, well, I wouldn't do it myself, but I wouldn't, and are pro-abortion, but I wouldn't prohibit a woman to choose. Well, you know, that's an interesting question. 314-912-1019. Now, there have been archbishops, I think, on both sides of the fence that say they, you know, they publicly say they won't give communion, the sacrament, to politicians who publicly affirm their pro-abortion stance. I think others, including the Pope, have been a little more squishy about that. Well, now comes San Francisco Archbishop. I love this. Salvatore Cordeleone. Cordeleone. Isn't that that's the Godfather that's family, isn't it?
Corleone.
Well, I'm close. Salvatore Cordeleone. San Francisco Archbishop announced Friday. He said yesterday that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi is barred from receiving Holy Communion due to her pro-abortion stance. This is an escalation in decades-long tension between the Roman Catholic Church and liberal Democratic politicians on abortion. He has written to the California Democrat informing her she should not present herself for Holy Communion at Mass and that priests will not distribute communion to her if she does present herself. This is what he says in his letter. A Catholic legislator who supports procured abortion after knowing the teacher of the teaching of the church commits a manifestly grave sin, which is a cause of most serious scandal to others. Therefore, universal church law provides that such persons are not to be admitted to Holy Communion, he says in the letter. Since the first century, the church has affirmed the moral evil of every procured abortion, the catechism says. This teaching has not changed and remains unchangeable. Now, this is an interesting deal, right? On the same token, the Pope said last year, quote, I have never refused the Eucharist to anyone. Although it's reported, he said he did not recall a time when a politician stood staunchly against church teaching and came to him for communion. So they just don't even bother about it. He referred to communion as, quote, a gift, close quote, and not a, quote, prize for the perfect. Very interesting. In that same interview, however, he emphasized that the church views abortion as homicide. So how do you feel about this? I know many of you out there may have a or may know someone who is staunchly religious, maybe sends their children to one of the parochial schools, the Catholic schools in town, And then at the other hand is pro-abortion or pro-choice. How do you reconcile that? How should we reconcile that? Very interesting. Now, probably the right thing to do is if you're a politician who's pro-abortion, you should probably not present yourself for communion in the eyes of the priesthood. And I know in most Protestant churches, the pastor has some kind of a, I would say, and if there's any pastors out there, any that are in the clergy, please call me at 314-912-1019. They would argue that they're protecting you from grave moral sin that could harm your eternal salvation. I think that's the argument. By not allowing you to take communion, that would be to your own detriment. I think that's the argument that goes. I'm not a theologian, but I think that's what it is. It's an interesting discussion. I think that a lot of people may have to do a gut check, a conscience pinch, you know, when they ponder their public stance and their faith belief. It's an interesting one. Mine is, you know, I do have that sort of faith-driven, God is the creator of all life, and it starts really early. There are good people on both sides of the anti-abortion fence that would say, well, is conception the start or is it implantation? I mean, there comes down to a point where, okay, we can have those discussions. I happen to think it's conception, but I'm not going to really split hairs there. I'm happy if people would just try it. If we developed a culture where abortion was abhorrent and we tried everything we could personally and collectively to avoid them. But also from a medical standpoint, having witnessed the awe and wonder and tears of joy when people see their little baby at 6 weeks with a heartbeat, and when later that baby loses its heartbeat, which sadly often happens, and the tears of sadness that happen. And there's something that if it didn't have value, if it didn't have meaning, if there wasn't humanity in that entity, those reactions wouldn't be so visceral, so strong, and so long lasting. So it's both a medical slash biological perspective I take and a human exceptionalism. Yes, I'm a human exceptionalist. Just like I think this country is exceptional, I think humans are exceptional. But there's those on the other side that say, hey, if you eat a plant, you're harming, you know, the collective Godhead or something. You know, I mean, that's fine, whatever. But I'd like to think we're special. Just like Twitter thinks that Elon Musk is special, but in a different kind of a way. So it's an interesting thought. If you have a comment about that, give me a buzz. 314-912-1019. It's again bubbled to the surface to see if the Supreme Court first draft that was leaked a couple of weeks ago becomes the final draft or some modification thereof. And if Roe versus Wade is overturned, and some people in some states may have to travel to get their procedure in another state because it's going to be accessible probably up to and maybe even a little past birth if you look at some of the laws circulating. In other states, though, I think there's great mistakes. There's some states that are talking about banning abortion under all circumstances, including the health of the mother. Are you kidding me? Now, that's one I'm going to probably have a problem with. There was a good article, yeah, I believe it was in the New York Times, written by a doctor who is staunchly, staunchly pro-life, but he's doing medical hospital work in, some African country. But he's there, like, permanently in a mission hospital. And he describes when he had to do an 18-week abortion, 18 or 20-week abortion, because the mother was hemorrhaging to death before his eyes, was brought in, was, you know, gray as a ghost, bleeding. The baby was still alive. There was blood pouring out of this woman. And he had to go in and do a late-term abortion. And he describes it in vivid detail. And he said, you know, I'm still pro-life, anti-abortion, but there are those gut-wrenching moments when he had to make a decision for the health of the mother. And I believe a loving God is going to have total understanding of that. How do I know? I'm not God. I can't read his mind. If God identifies as a him, I keep making that unwoke mistake, Max. I keep saying him about God.
How dare you, sir?
I know. Oh, my gosh. Actually, I think there's biblical precedent for that.
Yes.
Yeah, God is a he.
Yes.
At any rate, it's an interesting question. And one that I think it's fun to ponder and to think about when you have discussions with reasonable people that want to have a reasonable discussion. But on the other hand, there are unreasonable people. There are people that hold Tucker Carlson and those of us who want ideological replacement in this country not to happen because that's what Democrats want, is ideological replacement. It happens to take the form most recently and predominantly in the form of brown colored skinned people, because those are the majority of people coming up from Central America and Mexico across our poorest borders to the tune of 5,000 to 8,000 a day. And it's been twisted by the left to say that this is about a racist, a xenophobic motive. And that's what motivated the monster in Buffalo to do the killing. Here's Carl Cameron. Remember Carl Cameron? He was campaign Carl. I remember when I anchored that, we won an award for that, a TriCast we did from the debates in 2004, George Bush, the election then, from the Wash U campus. I had a chance to talk to Carl Cameron. And here's what he said the other day. Of course, now he's on CNBC. Was it MSNBC or CNN, one of them? Take a listen to what he said about people who want tight borders and are concerned about the dilution of the American citizen's voice with the hordes of illegal immigrants coming over. Listen to this.
And we got to watch out, because the Republicans have become the purveyors of misinformation. And when our two-party system is broken like that, democracy is seriously in trouble. The president acknowledged that. It's time to actually start doing things and maybe taking some names and putting people in jail.
Now, that was a discussion about people like Tucker Carlson that talk about illegal immigrants diluting the voices and the votes of American voters, and the Democrats and the left clearly, methodically, they've said it. And I'm not going to play that montage. One after another, they've said, well, pretty soon whites will be in the minority. That's them making a false narrative. It's the big lie that the Democrats are saying. This is not about color dilution of white people. If I knew that every Mexican and the vast majority of Mexicans and Central Americans were bringing a freedom loving small government ideology to these states and were doing it legally, I would say viva la immigration, because that would only increase the likelihood that we return to our founding principles. They don't bring that. They bring dependency. Yeah, they may work. They may work for pennies and take away American jobs. I'm not saying they don't have a work ethic, but they bring with them socialist ideologies, and that's what they expect from Texas, New Mexico, the border states, all the way up when they get transported on charter planes to others. And so here's what Joe Biden said. He was railing against this so-called replacement theory that he tries to attribute to any of you and me and anyone else that just wants tight borders and doesn't want dilution of American ideals by foreigners who have no clue and don't want to assimilate. Listen.
Lives of love, service, and community. It speaks to the bigger story of who we are as Americans. A great nation, because we're good people. Jill and I bring you this message from deep in our nation's soul. In America, evil will not win, I promise you. Hate will not prevail, and white supremacy will not have the last word. For the evil did come to Buffalo. It's come to all too many places, manifest in gunmen who massacred innocent people.
Yes, evil does exist in the mind of crazy people. It's demonic possession, which we call mental illness, whatever you want to call it. It has nothing to do with Tucker Carlson and Randy Tobler and many of you there who say, whoa, whoa, whoa. There were legal immigration waves, which we celebrate, with hardworking craftspeople who wanted to adopt the mores, the values of this country. There are other people who come to this country and the first thing they do is break the law. I don't care if they're brown, blue, purple, trans, non-binary. That's not the point. This is not a hate thing about people immigrating and their skin color. This is about the ideology they bring, starting with breaking the laws. And Joe Biden, Jill Biden, the rest of you on the left, we're not going to let you get away with it. We're just not going to let you get away with it with creating the narrative that somehow we're xenophobic. That's not it. It's about ideology, not melanin. And you got to stop mislabeling us. We're not going to stand for it. I'm Randy Tobler. We're going to come back and talk with Virginia Cruda about some miscarriage of justice in the St. Louis District Attorney's Office, as well as this issue about the gaslighting of people who want tight borders and calling that the source of the inspiration for the killer in Buffalo. You got to be kidding me. Okay, no more coffee. I'm going to step aside, take a couple big breaths. Virginia Cruda coming up right after the break. Welcome back to the program, 744. We always like talking to Virginia Cruda and cover the entire spectrum of what's going on in our world locally and nationally. Virginia, welcome to the program. Great to see you this morning.
Good morning.
So I read your story on the Daily Wire, and I didn't know about this, but I mean, we knew that there's large amounts of corruption and miscarriage of justice in Kim Gardner's, Circuit Attorney Kim Gardner's office. And we heard about that with the Eric Greitens. Say what you will about Eric Greitens, and that's a separate story. But I mean, you know, some shenanigans going on there. But now she is just sitting on all kinds of cases that have been apparently solved by the detectives, and she's not moving the process forward. What's that all about?
Right. So, and actually, I believe Tony Colombo talked about this week, too. He and Katie did on their show. There are 4,400, more than that, actually, but the number they gave was over 4,400 cases that are listed as PAWS, P-A-W-S, which is pending application of warrant. And what that means is that the police have solved the case. They have identified a suspect, and they have handed it over to the prosecutor's office for, like, if you ever watch Law and Order, it's the second half of the process. So, like, the police did the interviews, did the investigation. They found the suspect, and they're turning it over to the prosecutor so this can go to court, right? Mm-hmm. And there are 4,400 cases listed as PAWS that have not been, like, the district attorney or the circuit attorney in this case, Kim Gardner, has not moved on it. And
how does that compare to, I mean, is there some benchmark or some reference in a city the size of St. Louis, or maybe her predecessor, that is, I'm certain there's always a backlog because those cases tend to outnumber the, but I mean, is this an inordinate number of unacted upon, you know, cases?
There was one, and I can't remember the name of the guy, but it was in the KMOV article that I cited. There was one guy who had previously done Gardner's job, and he said when they had a backlog of a couple of dozen, it made him nervous, and they tried to get him out as quick as possible.
Oh my God!
So we're talking
over 4,000,
right? Wow. And so the issue here is that, and what Gardner's office is saying about it is that they used to have an in-person process for applying for warrants. So the police would do the investigation, they'd identify the suspect, and they go down to the courthouse themselves with the evidence and say, this is what I want. Charges I think are warranted, and this is how we should proceed. You know, this is how you should proceed with the case, right? Mm-hmm. Well, when the pandemic began, Kim Gardner's office went to full remote, and they never went back. So they implemented an email system, and now what the police officers have to do once they've completed the investigation is send an email to Kim Gardner's office. That's their only recourse.
Oh, my gosh.
So all of this is backed up in email. We don't even know if the circuit attorney has opened these emails, right? That's where we are now. And
well, this is a great story, and it's on the dailywire.com. Did you just search Virginia Cruda Daily Wire? You'll see it right at the top of the list. And you know what was even more appalling and frightening, Virginia? I didn't realize this, but she apparently has an exclusion list. I knew there was one.
Yes.
Kept by her office, which she has periodically added, you report, and it's not public. But it includes 75 police officers, I guess, can't even email, much less walk into the office, right? They cannot seek charges against people they arrest. What in the hell is that all about?
She ran on bail reform and criminal justice reform, which, if you read between the lines, means we're not going to prosecute anybody we don't feel like prosecuting, which in her case is apparently no one at all. she's had for since 2018, she's had what is called an exclusion list. And for reasons that she has not fully divulged to the public, there are a certain number of police officers, which, again, you noted it's up to about 75 now. It was originally, I think, 40. But there are police officers who, if they bring a solved case to her, she will not take it. She will not take up charges asked for by these police officers. They cannot testify on the stand in cases. And it can be any reason. Now, there is a hearing process that she is supposed to go through if she wants to put a police officer on a list like this. It's not that this is unheard of. It's because it used to be that if you wanted to deny a police officer the ability to testify on the witness stand or to present evidence or cases, you had to do a certain type of hearing where you say, okay, this police officer has demonstrated racial bias in his activities on the street. He's only arresting, you know, certain people, and this is why I don't trust evidence coming from it. In other words, she has to have a documented reason that she's not accepting cases or evidence from specific officers. She doesn't have one. She never did the hearing, and she still won't take cases from these officers. So
I got to tell you, this is an anger from Kim Gardner's office to the hardworking, dedicated, courageous, put their lives on the line officers on the beat, and probably some detectives as well, who are trying to protect the very people who probably voted for her and need their protection in a city that just last weekend had, what, 13 shootings? We're becoming Gotham, just like New York City and L.A. and other Chicago crime-infested rat holes. Mm-hmm. And what is wrong with this woman? Is she possessed demonically? Is she eating gummy bears with 95% marijuana in them? Like, I mean, what is wrong with this woman? She needs to be eliminated from office. What is going on? I'm outraged.
I don't know about that stuff, but I will say this. You know, one of the things that was noted in the report that actually wasn't noted in the KOV report, but I dug a little deeper and found some other stuff. The circuit attorney's office appears to be blaming the pandemic for the backlog. So they're saying, we went full remote and the email system and what have you. Well, if you look at 2019, so this is before the pandemic, 2019, St. Louis police officers presented over 7,000 cases applied for warrants in 7,000 cases. Kim Gardner only took up 1,600 of them.
Well, and yes, and you quote a criminal justice professor, mm-hmm. right? Criminology professor, yes. Who said that this is staggering. This can't be true, he says. There's got to be a mistake here, right? I mean, I don't know. I'm so glad you brought this to light.
If they printed out the list and laid the papers end to end, it would stretch. This is the solved cases that Kim Gardner's office is not looking at. If they printed out the list and laid the papers end to end, it would span a football field.
Well, she's going to have to look. I'm sorry. I believe in the devil. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm a simpleton. This has to be demonic. You have to be demonic when you're going to have that. You tell the story of this woman who lost her 8-month-old baby because in the hands of a caregiver was given a drug overdose and died. The case has been solved by the detectives, and she won't prosecute it. There's no justice. Shame on her. Her soul's going to burn in hell. I'm not asking for your comment on that, but that's my comment.
Yeah,
I'm worked up over this. I'm worked up. Okay, well, there's something else.
You live in St. You know, we live in the St. Louis area.
Yes,
and you know,
yes,
ma'am. I don't live downtown, but I know how this works. You know, when you don't solve the crime where it is, when you don't put a lid on crime where it is, it spreads outward. It radiates.
You send messages. Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And well, In the time we have left, I only have a couple of minutes, Virginia, but this is really, this is important stuff, and people need to get the word out on this. This woman needs to be, give her the hook, ladies and gentlemen. If you have any influence at all, Kim Gardner, shame on you. That's embarrassed. She ought to be embarrassed. I don't know her mom and dad even can talk to her. That's ridiculous. All right. Well, enough of that. Hey, nationally, what about this gaslighting of Tucker Carlson and others who just want to have some people that if they're going to immigrate, they do it legally. And they the notion is they assimilate. And if somehow you're against illegal immigration on the wings of Democrats wanting to get a larger population of people that will vote for Democrats and socialism, somehow you're responsible vicariously for the murder of 10 people in Buffalo. They're as crazy as Kim Gardner. Maybe there's demonic possession there, too, at the DNC. What's going on? Only have a couple
minutes. Well, I would say that there's a difference between what Tucker says, which is, he's looking at the situation and saying, well, the Democrats are for open borders. They seem to think that the Hispanic vote leans Democrat. Therefore, Democrats are in favor of open borders because they'd like to import a population that's more favorable. That's what he's saying.
And it's nothing about color. They happen to be brown. That's not what it's about. It's about ideology.
And what's interesting is that a lot of them aren't voting Democrat now, but that's beside the point. It used to be that the idea was that if you import a new population and you follow the Democrat policies, like, well, here's free money and here's free health care, and all you have to do is cross the border to get it, that these people would then, the exchange would be that they would vote Democrat if they were given the chance to vote. And so there's a difference between acknowledging that the population is changing.
Okay.
That's not saying replacement. They're talking about replacement theory as they're replacing white votes with brown ones and we're mad about it. That's not what Tucker was ever saying.
No. I'm tired of this gaslighting. We gotta stop taking it. We just gotta stop and stop letting them use their language. Well, we're out of time. Sorry, I got so worked up, Virginia, but it's all your fault. Now you're responsible for it.
What did I do?
Thanks, Virginia. Always fun. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
Okay, there she is, ladies and gentlemen. More coming up on the Tobler Show. 101.9 94.1 News Talk STL.